Hello friends and welcome to Season 3 of the Endhits Records podcast. This is your host Oise Ronsberger. This season we will talk in depth about B-Well's debut album, The Weight and the Cost. This is our third episode and today we will talk to bassist Aaron Delbecq. Originally a guitarist, he was a core member of two legendary and genre-defining hardcore bands, Converge and Bane. Besides that, he plays in an all-star punk rock band, Only Crime, alongside with members of The Descendants and Good Riddance. Aaron currently lives in Maryland with his family. Hi Aaron, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Really good, can't complain. So we are doing this podcast series where we talk in depth about, you know, new releases. And I talked to your bandmates, Brian McTernan and Mike Schleibam already. And it's your turn today to talk about the new B-Well record.
Awesome.
I wanted to go, you know, back to the beginning. And with the beginning, I mean, do you remember when you met Brian McTernan?
I don't remember the exact year, but I had known him in like 90, I think it was, Ashes was still around and he came up to Boston to look for a place to live, I believe. So it was before Bane had even started. I think it was like maybe 93 or 94. I know Converge had recorded a few things with him, but he came up to see Alana from Ashes. I think she was like going to Brown or something like that in Providence. And he came up and we had talked a little bit via, it wasn't email because there was no real email back then. So I don't even remember, just at shows, if my memory recalls. Yeah, he came up to DC, came up from DC to look for a place to live. And that was like 93 or 94, I believe. And then he had moved in with Pete from Mouthpiece, Trey, I believe. Sweet Pete and somebody else, and he had started his first studio up here.
Oh, the basement one, right?
Yeah. And that's when I first really met him, was like right before that. And then he moved up and we did one of the early Converge recordings with him there.
How many times did you work with him actually as a producer? There must be a bunch of recording sessions, right?
Yeah, there's got to be 8 to 10, I would say.
Oh, wow.
Because like we did two Converge EPs with them, the Bane demo, the first three Bane 7-inches, The Note, Give Blood. So like eight actually probably.
If you know, when you say you already recorded the Bane 7-inches with him, why didn't you record your debut album with him? It all comes down to this.
the question that everybody asks.
It's not a bad question, right?
No, if we could turn back time.
What was your motivation back then to not go with McTernan, but go with Austin from Today's the Day?
So we had done everything with Brian up to that point. We were so happy with it. But Converge had just done a tour with Today's the Day, and I had spent a lot of time with Steve Austin. Converge had just done When Forever Comes Crashing with Steve and Kurt. And Steve was super excited to, he really, really was pushing and wanted to do the new Bane record. And we were like, all right, let's go there and do some demos in a day and see how it sounds. So we had never done anything with Bane besides with Brian. So we were like, oh, let's just see what happens if we go somewhere else. Who knows what'll come out. So we did this demo. It was no vocals. It was just music. And we did it in 8 hours. We did like, it was seriously like, I think it was like 6 or 8 songs in 8 hours. And we got the demos, did a quick mix, and it sounded really good. So we're like, let's just give it a shot. Because it was really close to us. We could literally just drive there and be there in 20 minutes from where we lived. And just the rest is history, as they say. But then we felt this weird like allegiance that we were like, it's not really, we weren't happy with it, but we were so new to it at that point, I guess you could say, that like we felt that we couldn't go somewhere else with it. We couldn't be like, all right, we got to go fix this somewhere else. We felt this like weird allegiance that we had to stick with it. And I think we were just so wrapped up in the time at that moment. And like, we couldn't see past it. Cause we, at that time we were so excited. It was our first full length. We had like this huge vision of what was going to happen, like the whole package, everything. And I think we were just so overwhelmed with it. And that we didn't have take a chance to like step back and like kind of give it a good look at it. And it just, yeah. Me and Brian have talked randomly about like, I still have all the ADATs and no studio has ADATs anymore really, but I still have them. And we talked about like digitizing, like going to get it digitized for Pro Tools and have Brian try to mess with it just to see what happens. And if we like it, awesome. If not, then whatever, but just see if we can make it sound a little bit better.
Did Brian at that point, you know, when you released the record, you know, did he give you any feedback on it, or did, was he like hurt that you didn't do it with him, or?
Not really. I don't really remember having be hurt, like having really be upset or hurt or anything. And then, I mean, it was probably the fastest turnaround for Bane ever to do a new record. But 2 years later, we did Give Blood, and I mean, he was more than excited to do it again. So. Mm-hmm. I've never asked him. I don't think there were any hard feelings. I feel like he kind of understood that we just wanted to see what happened with somebody else, you know?
How big was his impact on Give Blood back then?
He was very, it was the first time I feel like with Bane and with him at least that he like really was critical of everything. I think we collaborated a lot. Like we had the songs all done. And I think at that was the first time that he really collaborated with us in a way of like, he'd be like, no, let's try going, you know, going to this note or like cutting this in half or like only do this riff like twice instead of four times or whatnot, you know, like, and he was really on us for the first time of being like, nope, you got to do that again. That sucked. You know, like go do that again. Or, you know, you're hitting that note wrong or whatever. Bedard would, you know, like, go try that line again. You can do better. You know, I think it was the first time that somebody really, really pushed us to make sure we got our best performance out of anything, you know?
So a few years later, you got in the studio with him again to record the Note.
Yep.
And if I remember correctly, you were not too excited again with the outcome of that. Is that correct?
No, we were, I think we were really excited about the music 100% and the sound overall. I think the issue was at first, because I mean, sonically, to not sound cliche, but sonically, I think Give Blood was like the plateau for us at that point. So for us to come back and do another record and have it sound better or on par was really hard. And I think there was an issue with like the mastering. It just wasn't getting the punch that we wanted to have, you know? But it was also a whole different experience too, because like that was the first time we recorded with Bobby, you know, like that was a whole new thing for us. Mm-hmm. But I mean, overall, it was great. I mean, I loved it. I honestly have never had a bad recording experience with Brian.
A few years later, Bane ended, like in 2016, you guys played your last two shows. How did your life change at that point? Because if I remember correctly, Spain is gone and only Crime is also not doing anything, right?
Yeah. That was a double-edged sword going on right there. Like when Bane was ending, I was super busy with Bane, obviously. And then everybody else in Only Crime was not doing anything while Bane was touring. And then Bane ended and then everybody else in Only Crime started doing things. So it was like, oh, hot, this sucks. I have nothing to do. For the first few months, for the first 6 months, I would say, of Bane ending, it didn't affect me so much. It was more like, we're on a little break, or like, you know, in my head, I was like, oh, this is great. But I never realized there was nothing else on the horizon. And it was good in a lot of ways. Like, you know, I for the past, you know, almost 4 years, I've been able to spend the time with my son, which is absolutely awesome. But at the same time, I know this is going to sound super cliche, but I mean, I started touring the year I graduated high school. So I graduated in 92 and I toured nonstop till 2016, essentially. Like, I don't think I had ever been home for more than 3 months from 92 to 2016. So I never realized what I got out playing shows, if that makes sense. Like, I never realized, like, the release. Like, I knew that it was a release for me, but I didn't realize what I wouldn't get out if I didn't have the shows. So, like, that was definitely, like, a huge shock to my system.
Was it, like, a huge transformation to, you know, from being the guy everybody knows to being the guy, you know, in whatever town you lived at that point that no one knows or knows as the guy that is a father and a husband?
Yeah, it's a little bizarre. It's a little weird. I'm always the first person to be like, you know, I mean, and it's true. Like, I'm no different than anybody else that's walking on the street. Like, anybody can do what I believe that anybody can do what I did and what I'm doing with music. Like, if you have the drive and the ability to, whether it's playing music, whether it's to write a book or whatever, like, I feel like anybody can push themselves to do it. And I've always been that person that's like, I'm no different than you were. You, like, we're on the same playing field, kind of. But it is definitely weird in a weird way to not be that person anymore. Like, to just be Joe Schmo, you know, it's like, oh, I used to be in a band, or I used to tour, you know, like I used to go all over the world. now I'm stuck in Northeast Maryland with, like, you know, like, we looked at the place we're moving to today and the population is 2,600.
It's like, crazy. You play to more people on Sundays.
Yeah, exactly.
When did you start talking to Brian about doing Be Well?
So they had posted something, Battery's going to Europe, and like the past, so Bane ended in 2016, and I would say like 8 months to a year after that, like, I've never been depressed ever really in my life. Like, I've always had the outlet of music. So like after about that year, like, I started getting pretty bummed out. Like, I just see people's posts about tours and I would get super bummed out. And I was always like, didn't want to put myself out there to play music as much. Like, I wanted to play music, but I didn't want to come off as like, I need to play music. Somebody do something, you know? And like, Brian had posted something about Battery going to Europe. And I think I messaged him or I posted. I was like, bring me with you. Like, and then they went to Europe, and then Schleibaum actually hit me up and he was like, hey, Brian and I are doing this new band. Would you want to play? And I was like, yeah, what is it? And he's like, oh, it's the I'll send you the music. We need a bass player. And I was like, I play guitar, but sure, why not? Like, and it was really bizarre. And like, he sent me the music and I loved it. And like, that was in July or August of 2019. He hit me up and then he sent me some of the demos they had been starting. So it was bizarre because it was like a whole new experience, actually. I mean, it's still a stringed instrument, but learning to play bass, you know, as opposed to playing the guitar, you know?
Because I actually think a lot of people, you know, dismiss bass as this, yeah, it's just less strings and no chords thing. But I think especially with a drummer, in combination with a good drummer, bass is this whole different thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a different whole. And I'm learning that. I mean, learning it more and more as I go. It's like a whole different world. Like, but it's fun. I like it. I mean.
Did you even own a bass?
No. I was literally like, yeah, I'll do it. And I was like, I got off the phone to them and I was like, shit, I need to find a bass. And like, I ended up buying a bass and I borrowed Peter, the other guitar player. I borrowed his bass head because he plays bass in another band. So I borrowed his bass head for a little while until I got a new one. So,
where did you know Schleibaum from?
I've known Schleibaum from shows in DC area with just being around Brian 20 something years. Like, I've known him since he was a short haired guy wearing JNCOs.
Because it's funny, then looking at you two guys, you're not really opposites, but you are like on different angles of the spectrum.
Oh yeah.
So it's funny knowing that the two of you are in the band together is just great.
I think that's what makes it so unique though. You know what I mean? Like, we're so opposite. Like, I think everybody in the band is so opposite of everybody else, but has the same vision and has the same, at the base of it all, has the same vision and has the same draw to the music, you know? Mm-hmm.
Did you know the other members?
No.
Brian and Schleimer? No.
Nope. I think I met Peter once or twice a long time ago, and I did not know Shane at all. Like, I believe Bane had played some shows with Fairweather, so we've crossed paths, but I did not know them at all.
Both Brian and Schleibam told me that you did a recording session with the drummer of Darkest Hour, correct?
Yeah.
But that got, you know.
Yeah, he just wasn't a good fit.
Do you, like, especially now that you are the bass player in this band, do you know what the reason for that was? Or
I mean, listening to the stuff and then listening to it with, like, Shane, I feel like Shane is overall, he's a better fit. He's not so, I don't want to say mechanical, but like so like obviously, like, you need somebody that keeps amazing time. But like, I feel like it wasn't like Travis was just too much of like a pattern. You know what I mean? Like, it was too mechanical almost. Like, he's a great metal drummer. And for Be Well, we don't need a metal drummer.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different feel, right?
Exactly.
It's not a question if somebody's good. It's more a question, you know, does somebody have the right feel? And
exactly. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, Travis loves playing to a click track. And, like, that's just not the right feel for Be Well.
Yeah. How was it recording with Brian this time around? So he's been your producer. So I assume he told you a few times in the past things differently and had this, you know, kind of for the process, for the lack of better word, like, he was the authority figure. And now you're his bandmate at the same time. Like, was it a tough combination? Like, have him fill those double roles as a producer and singer?
I don't really think so. I feel like he's pretty much the same person as you. To me, at least, like, he's the same person as a producer or a singer to me. Any producer that I've ever worked with is, I've always just had that same feel of like, oh, it's a friend. And maybe that's just everybody I've ever worked with has actually been a friend. Mm-hmm. And that's just like, I don't think of him as like this like a boss or like a overseer of everything.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
By the way, I see a pattern there. You like to start bands with producers.
I know, right? Better for the recording budget.
Because they never charge their own band, you think?
But I like it. I mean, I don't think he's any different, honestly. If anything, it's a little more laxed with him being a singer and a producer. He'll have a vision of what he wants for something, like, in his head, but he also wants it to be our own unique thing as a band, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know,
how's it different from working with Bill Stevenson, if you already, you know,
before going to record like the Only Crime stuff, Brian was the toughest producer I'd ever worked with, like, you know, making sure you get a good take and all that stuff. But like, when I went to go record the first Only Crime record, it was like a whole new world of pain. Like, not only is it like with Bill, like when Only Crime would record, we would go out to the blasting room, stay there for 2 weeks to write. And we would write for 12 hours a day, just practicing in this room and practicing and writing and practicing and writing, like literally 2 weeks straight, 2 weeks straight, 12 hours a day. And it was awesome, but it was also like, you know, like in my head, I'm like, oh, this is why Black Flag is so good, or this is how, this is why the Sense League is so good, because there is no option. Like, you have to be on top of everything. You have to, like, work it into your brain so there is no fucking it up.
So those stories about him and that work ethic are absolutely true, you say?
100% true. 100% true. Like, legitimately, when we were recording the first Only Crime record, he did – I actually – let me rephrase. He sat behind me most of the time, and Livermore was actually recording. But while we were recording that record, I was so bummed and so pissed, because they were like – I'd be like, play something, like, nope, do it again. Do it again. Do it again. And I'd be like, I'm doing the same thing. Like, and then I finally get it. And in my head, I was like, oh, wait, this is what they wanted. But in my head, I kept thinking it was the same thing I had just done. I had just done it again. Do it again. Do it again. And I was like, but that also changed my view of everything. And up to that point, Brian is amazing at what he does. But to me, that was like a whole new level. You know what I mean? And at that time, Bill was still a good friend, but I had known Brian for so long, but Bill was a newer guy that I'd never worked with, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was great.
When was the first time you saw the lyrics
for Be What?
Mm-hmm.
The first time I actually saw the lyrics were right before when he sent the layout out, actually, I believe, for the EP.
Really, that late in the game?
Yeah.
And what was your first thought when you saw and read them?
So yeah, the first time I read Brian's lyrics really were when the 7-inch came out, right before I think he had sent the lyrics with the layout, and that was the first time I really sat down and read them. But I was really happy how personal the lyrics were. Like I said, everything that I've worked with up to that point had been with singers that had very personal lyrics. So I was happy to see that they were very personal. And I mean, I've known Brian for a long time. So, I mean, obviously there's stuff that I didn't know about him, but it was kind of what I was expecting, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. So a thing that Brian said to me when I talked to him was, for all those years when he was a producer, he was afraid to show that side of himself because he thought his clients would be, you know, very or not ready to work with somebody that's such a quote unquote mess, and it would be hard for them to trust somebody that had so many issues.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you see any of that when you recorded with him? Like, did you even realize he was going through stuff?
No, because I mean, in the real world, I mean, I think 80 or 90% of the people that are involved in music are a fucking mess. Because there's a reason why we start playing music and like get all the stuff out. Because, like, you know, obviously there's varying degrees of it, but like not many people get into this just to like to play music. I mean, yes, you start that, but then you realize that there's all this stuff and like you get all this energy out and like you get these feelings out and like there's reasons and there's stuff that's stuck inside you that you end up getting out, you know? And it's an outlet for that. And, you know, there's varying degrees of it, but I feel like everybody involved in this thing has something, you know what I mean? Has some kind of demon, sort of say, or something.
Yeah, something that even brings them to
exactly
this thing, yeah.
Exactly.
It's more of the question, not if you're fucked up, but what fucked you up.
So
you...
exactly. Yeah. Like what extent is it? You know, like...
So some of his lyrics seem to be directed, you know, specifically to his daughter. It's like Brian speaking to his daughter. And what he said is he felt like he was hiding this side from himself, like of himself, for so long from her. And he felt like he kind of owed it to his daughter to document those things and, you know, talk about it so she later on gets the full picture of her dad. You're a father yourself now. Do you understand that, or is there something that you specifically are hiding from your son?
I mean, I get it for sure. I don't necessarily think there's anything I'm hiding from my son, but I mean, I definitely get it. Like, like Scout will never know that I was gone for the first 2 years of his life. Like, he'll really never mentally really know that. But like, you know, there's things that, I mean, I'm bummed. Like, that's really, I mean, I guess that's really the only thing that I can say that I'm right. Like, at this point that I'm like, I would be like trying to not, like that I would be hiding from him, would just be like, you know, being absent. But like, I mean, I am a pretty lucky guy. Like, I mean, my parents are still happily married. Like, I grew up in a family that like didn't struggle immensely. Like, my parents were working a lot, but like they made sure everything was there. And like, luckily, like I never had any mental health issues, or like, you know, I was lucky on that point. My own, you know, like my struggles were just like, I was the only kid that was a punk rocker in my high school or my middle school. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't, you know, I'm thankful that I didn't have many issues when I was younger like that, you know, but I see where Brian is coming from with that. Like, I think it's a bold move, like in a good way, that he does that, you know, like Cassidy's old enough now that she'll, like, hopefully she could read that and be like, oh yeah, and like get it and know, you know, like, there's no question, like, obviously no question that like they all know how much they love each other, but like, you know, that he can do that, that he can put himself out there and be like, you know, you need to know this. Or
Has your son seen you perform?
he was sleeping at the last bank, you know. he was there though.
Good choice.
Yeah. I've asked him a few times to come see us play, and he'll be like, yeah, and then he'll say no. My nephew, who is just turned 13, he's in a band, a punk band, and he's the oldest one, and my Scout went to go with me to go see him play, but he hasn't seen me play yet.
That is hilarious. So he hasn't been to a Be Well show either?
No. But he did say he wants to go see Dad play and do a stage dive. So we'll see what happens.
Early on, you talked about how you toured nonstop from early 90s into, you know, until Bane stopped. So you worked so hard and put so much into it. And the last few years you had a family, and I'm sure that was a big struggle. Like, as you said, you were not around the first few years of Scott's life. Is it even possible with Be Well to put that much into a band again? And do you think you even have to do that now?
I mean, that was kind of a talk we had early on. And like, we're all dads. Literally everybody in the band has at least one kid. So we knew early on that, like, and I feel like, you know, most of that time was with Bane, and Bane was lucky enough that nobody had kids, and we literally toured 8 months a year, for better or for worse. And like, we knew early on that Be Well wouldn't tour that much, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like a known thing that we're like, all right, we're going to do everything we can. Do things when we need to, sort of say, and like, you know, do the shows that we want to do and do the shows that we need to do and play as much as we can. But I honestly don't feel like bands need to tour like when Bane did, and like tour 8 months a year, you know, like I really don't think that's, I mean, would I like to be able to do that? Yes. You know, like, but I just don't think bands need to do that anymore, if that makes sense. I mean, especially with the world is at this moment, like when shows happen again, when things open up again, like, I really don't think it's going to take much. I mean, people are going to be clamoring to go to shows. Like, it's going to literally be a year, probably, before people have been able to go to shows. You know, and if the bands or the venues or the restaurants survive through this chaos, I think on the other side, it's going to end up being great, I hope. And hopefully people realize not to take shit for granted. Oh, yeah. know? But I think that's going to help. Like, and going back, I think that's like, I don't think we have to tour 6 months a year. I mean, we can't. I mean, realistically, like, we just can't do it. But we want to play shows as much as we can and do stuff as much as we can. You know, and if things got to a point where it was like, we have to tour X amount of time, and there's going to be a payoff for it, for lack of a better way to put it. But like, if there's like, you know, we can't turn this stuff down. It's just like too good to turn down. Then yeah, we'll find a ways to do it. You know what I mean? Like, if, you know, we don't ever want to do things but without them, but like, say like, whoever, say I can't do something, and you know, Be Well gets offered a tour for 3 weeks with whatever band, and it's like, we have to do it. We've had the talks before. It's like, all right, then we'll get somebody to do it. You know, like, not that anybody is disposable or interchangeable, but we also know, like, we have to do what's for the best for the band, you know?
Yeah. Are you still ambitious after all those years?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how. Because I mean, you definitely, like, kids are lazy now too. Like, my hope is this puts a lot of things into perspective for a lot of people, and people don't think, like I said, people don't take things for granted, and like, you know, hopefully people appreciate things a little bit more, or like, I don't know, I'm trying to find the best outcome for all of this, you know, like, but somehow I still am really ambitious. Like, I really want to play shows. I really want to do this as much as we can. And like, I think it's a great band, and I think we can do a lot of stuff and have a lot of fun. And that's the thing. Like, we have fun with it, and everybody loves playing. So it's like, in the end, that's really all that matters to all of us, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's obvious if you listen to it, the energy is, you know, undeniable.
Yeah.
What do you think are the influences of Be Well? Like, what do you think makes it what it is right now?
The band, or?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like it's just everybody. I mean, we all came from the same world, but went different. It's like all of us, like, we're all from the same base. Like, we all started the same pot.
And then, probably, like, started all in the same basement.
exactly, you know, and then everybody went on their own little ways and like did their things, but we still had those same roots, you know what I mean? Like, we all grew up going to the same shows and listening to the same bands and all that, and now we're like coming back to the same point, and we all have the same, at the root of it, we all have the same ethics, you know what I mean? Like, whether it's like, you know, Brian recorded like these gigantic records, and like Schleibaum has become like a metal god, and like Peter's like he's an amazing musician who works like at a museum, and I don't know Shane as much, but he's like this awesome dude who's a dad that works at a bar that just wants to play, and like, and he's an absolutely amazing drummer. And like, but we're all back, and we all know that we want to do this and have fun and like get this out to as many people as we can.
Apart from Be Well, what are, you know, musical plans for you? Are there any plans for Only Crime? Are you guys trying to do anything in the near future, or?
We want to. We actually go through like the cycle with Only Crime that like when Bane ended, I was, after like 6 months, I was like, let's do something. And everybody's really busy. And then 6 months go by, and then we'll get another group of techs going around. And it's usually started by me or Matt, because we're the only two that didn't have anything going on. And then we'd be like, talk about it. And like, we're talking about getting like everybody that was in the band together. So like, Zach and Donnie are going to come in and actually help us write, like all of us write together. And we actually started. And then about a few months ago, Russ sent out a text saying like, hey, let's do this. So, and then all this stuff happened with the coronavirus, and that kind of shut everything down a little bit. So I'm hoping, I'm really hoping at some point we can do it once this stuff all settles down, because I feel like we have some really good music left in us, you know? Like, it was really cool, like, going back to the recording thing, this is a little known fact, but like, so the first Only Crime record, we recorded with Jason Livermore and Bill producing it. That was like the first record all working together. Virulence, our second record, besides the vocals and like one or two guitar solo overdubs, that was literally all recorded live. Like all of us in the same room, press record, go. And then the last record we did it, we all recorded ourselves. So I was the only one in the studio recording my guitar, like literally press and record, play my guitar. If I thought it was good, it was a keeper. If I didn't, I had to help keep myself accountable. So like, I'm really excited to see like what the next thing would be, like what we would do next.
You know? I love how it's this little science project that's different every time.
It is, it is. And I love playing bass, but I really miss playing guitar. It's a totally different thing. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I get it. I think we covered pretty much everything. I'm sure you don't want to talk about the Bane documentary on the podcast. It's coming.
It's coming soon. It's so close. And as opposed to what most people think, it has nothing to do with people being lazy. It's just a matter of logistics and getting people to sign paperwork and getting everything done. And actually, Ricky, the guy who's editing it all, his wife, his girlfriend or fiance, I think, she works for the government. So she was in, they were in Colorado. A year after the last Bane show, they moved to Puerto Rico and she was doing stuff down there. And then she just got transferred to Germany. So they're actually living in Germany right now. So they've had a lot of really big moves in the middle of it unexpectedly, but it's there. It's coming soon.
I'm sure it's going to be worth the wait. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it.
Awesome. So Aaron, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for everything. Thank you for always supporting us and me as a, thank you for letting me keep pestering and pestering you. And then you finally seeing the light.
I saw the light. So what people don't know, should we tell that story real quick at the end?
sure.
That you, you know, kept going at me like, hey, I have this new band and, you know, it has all these people in it that, you know, and it's good. And I'm like, yeah, and I listened to it and it was great. And then, it always, like, when you guys, when you approached me, it always fell in a period where I thought, yeah, I would love to do it, but I don't think the label can do it justice.
Yeah.
And then you sent the final mix over, I think, or close to the final mix.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't resist anymore.
It's great. I from day one, when we started, me and Brian started talking, we were like, all right, who we want to send it to see who can put it out. And I was like, you know, I was like, do we want to send demos anywhere? Or do we just want to? And we both were like, Equal Vision has always been great for like Bane. And they did Fairweather and all that. So we had a really good relationship with them. Dan was really into it. And I was like, I want to do it with Oisey. Like, I want to do it with End Hits because it's like, why, you know, like, I mean, you guys did amazing for the last Bane record. And it was like, everything you've ever done has always been amazing and you've done a great job. And I was like, we have to get him to do it. And Brian was like, yes, we got to get him to do it. So I sent you the songs and you're like, ah, I like it a lot. It's great. And you were like texting me on tour. You were like, these songs are great, blah, blah, blah. I was like, you got to do it. He's like, yeah, we'll see. And then like, it kind of fell off and you were on the road. Weird, because you're never on the road, right?
Never.
And then I sent you the record and you're like, at the time, you're just not going to work. And then Brian and I were literally like, you're like, I don't think I can do it justice. And Brian and I were both like, a bad job with End Hits will be good compared to most people. And I think I even said that to you. I think I was like, I don't, like, we just want you to do it. And you're going to you'll do better than anybody could anyway.
Oh, that's flattering. The thing is, so at that point, I was like, because I'm, you know, we're friends and we're really good friends. And I just didn't want to fuck it up.
And I knew, but you wouldn't. And like, that's the thing. Like, that's, and that was the thing too. I knew if you didn't want it, if you were really like, no, I really can't, then I know you would have said no. Yeah. Or you could have said, I really can't do that, you know. But I knew if I kept pushing you, you had some doubt, but I knew you
could. I'm a pushover for good music. What can I do? Perfect. I think that's the best spot to wrap it up, right?
Awesome. Awesome.
Hey, glad it worked out and glad we got to talk. I haven't heard you in real life for so long. So
I know.
Yeah, hopefully when all this mess is over, we can hit the road together. That would be my dream. That's the dream scenario.
When 2023 comes around and yes. The shit clears up, we're going to be on a bus.
Yeah. we're gonna sleep on someone's floor again.
Exactly. You'll be sleeping in the loft with me.
Awesome. Aaron, thank you so much.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much.
Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you very much for listening to the End Hits podcast. If you enjoyed this episode as much as we did, please send us feedback, share it with your friends, subscribe to the podcast, or give us a review. Stay safe and take care.